against Senator from Salem, Senator Courtney moves that the committee adopt the Senate Special Committee on Budget Solutions, said special session of the 71st Legislative Assembly. Is there a discussion? Is there objection? Cut, it's been so approved. This morning,
I just have a question now that we've adopted them. I'll probably get to the bottom of them.
If you want to get pretty.
My question is, number 11 says that we have to give notice in writing at least 2 hours. Oh, never mind. That's just fine. I'll read the rest of the sentence.
Okay.
I just wondered how that was going to work at the end. I'm assuming it'll be an end.
There will be an end. We haven't said which year, but there will be an end. Okay. We have adopted the rules, so this morning this is an informational meeting. We are honored and privileged to have two of our distinguished staff members here this morning. Gina, we're glad you're here with us. Ken Rocco and Paul Warner, would you please come forward?
What's the thing? That's you. I'm still wearing that denim shirt. Look at the denim shirt.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is this going to be a boring thing?
No,
it should be lively.
I went for, yeah.
Hey.
All right. Mr. Rocco, welcome to the committee, and Mr. Warner, welcome to the committee. Which one would like to begin? Mr. Rocco, would you like to begin first? Or?
We voted that Ken Rocco, Westlake Fiscal Office, we voted that Mr. Warner would go first.
Okay. Mr. Warner.
Okay, Mr. Chair, Paul Warner, Legislative Revenue Office. You should have before you a one-page handout that has general fund forecast analysis on one page, and then on the back it has cumulative rebalance plan. So that's what I was going to walk through with you to give you a sense of the situation we're in right now, the kinds of actions you've taken up to this point, and just a list of things that have been discussed at various points as possible solutions, all of which can be modified and changed in a large number of ways. And some additional things could be added to this as well. In terms of the general fund forecast analysis, to give you a sense of what's happened, and I think it's safe to say at this point that the decrease we have had in the general fund revenue forecast since close of session is very close to what we've considered really near the worst case of our plausible scenarios. We've typically gone back to the 81-83 period as the most difficult times in terms of our revenue, and our forecast is actually down just about 20% compared to, our revenue is down about 20% compared to forecast for that biennium when you adjust for actions that were taken by the legislature. The comparable number now is about 15%. You can see in the last column there of 0103. So you're 15% less than projected, actually about 16% if you account for the actions you've taken, particularly the Measure 88 phase-in, which is in that number. I'd also call your attention to the first column, 0102, which gives you a sense of what's actually happened. That uses the close of session forecast for the fiscal year 0102, which is now in the books. And you can see where we are. We had projected $5,259,000,000. We're at, came in at $4,326,000,000. a shortfall of $933 million below projections, 18% below projections. So that fiscal year actuals that are in now is actually pretty close to the 81-83 shortfall in revenue.
Mr. Warner, prior to September 11th last year, going back to July 1st, 2001, were economic indicators leaning towards a revenue shortfall prior to September 11th, 2001?
Yes, they were. As you recall, Mr. Chair, there was the first forecast that came out right after the end of session was done in August. And that showed a reduction of about $250 million, if I recall. So there were signs that we were coming in under already. I think the biggest drop, and it's certainly related to September 11th, but a large number of other factors, has been the loss of capital gains revenue. And that the magnitude of that loss really did not become fully clear until this last forecast. And that was, there was the June forecast captured a large piece of that. September forecast is what fully adjusted to what Office of Economic Analysis now estimating is an 82% reduction in capital gains in 01 tax year compared to 2000.
The next question they have is, you took out capital gains loss. In other words, if you took out the stock market loss, is the economy actually down in Oregon? Is it level, or is it decreasing just slightly, or is it decreasing substantially?
Mr. Chair, the data that we've had that's gone back and tried to, well, it basically revised some of the 2001 numbers. We now see that the forecast really, or the recession really started in the first quarter of 2001. So the first 9 months of 2001, the national economy was declining. Well, Oregon was declining at that time. Our job growth was negative year over year. It reached a peak in terms of job losses in about December of last year. And since that time, while we haven't seen much recovery, we've been more or less bouncing along the bottom. For example, in the first quarter, we actually had a slight employment increase of about 0.4%. Second quarter, we had about an equal loss, about 0.4% decline. So we're about bouncing along the bottom in 2002. So the economy, it doesn't appear to be deteriorating at this point. Certainly not, nowhere near the way our revenue is declining.
The next question I have then, if the economic indicators were indicating that we were declining in 2001, why was not budget recommendations made during the 2001 session that compensated for those projected reductions in revenue?
Mr. Chair, the forecast that you worked with to develop the budget were based on a national economy that was not technically in recession, but would be very slow. That was the forecast. It was based on capital gains income that would be down marginally 10 to 15%. What we saw happen was when those first half of 2001, those numbers were revised, indeed we were in recession at that point rather than having a slow economy. And then the capital gains scenario turned out to be much worse than was anticipated at that time. So really you had, and the numbers here do show that the forecast to close the session was for growth, but very modest growth in terms of revenue. What's happened is you had in the first fiscal year you had a decline in revenue of 17% if you adjust for the kicker and some other actions that were taken. You had a decline of about 12%. That is something, a 12% decline in actual dollars is something we have not experienced in the post-war period. So, no, that was not anticipated, that decline of that magnitude.
Thank you. Senator Yee, would you like to come up and join the committee? Senator Bedgley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Warner, your figures you were giving us on the capital gains reductions, the loss of revenue there, could you give us an indication of how you expect that to recover? What kind of a time frame you could see those figures improve?
Senator, as you know, capital gains is largely determined by changes in overall value in the stock market. That's something that has been very difficult to predict. The current September forecast does call for a bounce back over the next 3 to 4 years. The capital gains income in 2000 was right about $6 billion. The estimate, based on about half the returns, is that drops about $1.1 billion in 2001. So a drop of 80%, as I said earlier. The forecast does assume that gradually increases back to about $4 billion by 2006. So there is expectation of growth there. It's very difficult to determine what is an equilibrium in the stock market after the boom we had in the 90s and now the bust here. Do we move back to some long-run equilibrium? That's normally what forecasts assume. That would be somewhere in between that boom and bust. Or are we on a long-term cycle where with the changes in the economy, we have a lot more volatility and instability than what we've had in the post-war period? That's another possibility, that we see swings of much greater magnitude in the market than what we've seen previously.
I've been on revenue like Senator Juice and others, but I think there must be something wrong with the forecasting method, or at least we should remodel it. And I don't know whether it takes legislation, whether something's wrong, because, Paul, you and I have had a conversation. I don't mean to put you in a hot spot. In no way is this intended for you, but you used to be the person who did this forecasting. Is that correct, Paul? This is the fifth one that's been missed. And the thing is, if it was missed long, it's one thing. But we have missed it short. I mean, really short. I'm thinking of the June nightmare, and now this nightmare. The next one's what, coming in December? It's almost like I don't want to hear you during this special session say a single thing about the forecast in December, because something's not working here. This thing is just not working. And I don't know how to remodel it, Mr. Chair, or anything. And maybe you all, because of your investments and your stock market and intellectualism, you understand all this. But this just isn't working for us. I mean, we really thought in June we packed that thing together, which eventually got nearly killed on, that by putting 150 or 75 million in imbalance, we could take care of September. We completely botched that thing was blown up in no time. In June, we were thinking 50, then we're to 150, to the next thing I know, that blew up. And I don't want to hear a single word about December. At least don't discuss it around me, because whatever you do, I'm going to say, I'm going to add double it or triple it. I just don't understand. I mean, are you going to recommend a new approach, Paul, given your experience and background, to economic forecasting for the state of Oregon?
Senator, you mentioned a number of things there. First of all, yes, you have been listening to me, and between forecasts and the magnitude of the drops have surprised me. So I can't stand here and say that, gee, I expected this to come. I certainly didn't, and I did not anticipate a drop of 12% in revenue. I think we knew there were significant risks in the economy, but the declines we've seen, as I said at the beginning, are really on the range, right at the end of the range of what we thought were plausible declines, because it's similar to the worst experience we've had in the post-war period. On your point in terms of the forecast process, I have spoke with House Revenue Committee Chair Shetterly and recommended that we do a review of the forecast process. I think that's a good thing to do anyway on a regular basis, and now I think would be particularly a good time to do that, to bring in some outside economists, including our office at Legislative Revenue, and look at the process and see if we can make some suggestions and what might help us in the future. I think it is important to recognize that the economic system has changed in some important ways, and, and we're still wrestling with the implications of that. This appears to be one of the implications, is that at least in terms of an income tax, you've got a more volatile system because of the components of income have changed. We see, particularly in terms of labor compensation, that there's more use of bonuses, more use of stock options. So what happens is you don't see the layoffs you saw, for example, in the early 80s, but what you see is a big drop in that discretionary kind of income that's given to workers, and that's all taxed at 9% in Oregon, and so we see much more volatility on the income tax front. So we need to really sit down and reassess the implications of those changes and review the forecast process. So I do think that's an important thing to do, and I think a very important role for you as legislators is to review that system, to make sure that you're comfortable with that forecasting system, because you have to rely on it and make decisions based on it. So that's my recommendation, is to have a thorough review of it and report back to you.
Paul, is there any kind of models that states use? You know, you have certain inputs, certain outputs, some standards you can use to predict the revenue, the shortfall of revenue and income?
Senator, the states, we use a similar national forecast, and they're provided by forecast services, and those are pretty consistent across the state. And really, I mean, if you look at the economic forecast and compare that with closed recession, we're down marginally compared to that, but nowhere near the magnitude we're down on the revenue side. So really the issue is the revenue side and how we're projecting revenue. States do a lot of work in that area, and their expertise tends to vary with the type of revenue system they have. For us, obviously, we've focused on the personal income tax. That's where we focused our efforts. I think we're probably one of the considered to be state of the art in terms of income tax forecasting, because that's what we do. But obviously, we need to take another look at what we're doing and talk with other states. I will point out that the federal government has reported their deficit has continued to grow beyond expectations, and their tax collections are down 6.6% compared to last year, predominantly income taxes. This is the biggest drop in federal revenue since 1947. And so they did not anticipate this magnitude of a drop either. And they're experiencing the same kind of things we are. So I think one of the things that would be helpful for us is to consult with Treasury and the federal government and their forecasting efforts, because their emphasis is also on the income tax.
Okay, thank you. Senator Harper? Yeah, they own the fringe bread. Are there further questions to Paul? Sorry for the interruption. I just wanted to get a foundation for some of these presentations we were about ready to make here. So go ahead. Go ahead.
If I could make one more reference to the first part of that chart in the general fund forecast analysis, is if you look at the change from the prior year, the column for 01-02, you can see that the close of session forecast did project a drop this year of 1.5% and a snapback of 10% in 02-03. But a lot of that was due to the kicker refund, due to federal pension refund, and the underlying forecast is really for about 3% growth in revenue, which is about half of what would be, we consider, a long-term average. So that was the adjustment that was made to a weak economy. What's happened is we were declined about 17% in 01-02, and now we're projecting to grow 16% next year, basically back to where we were in the prior year, 01-02. But if you adjust for the pension, the kicker, master settlement agreement, Measure 88, and so forth, and just kind of look at the underlying forecast, for 01-02 is down 12%. And I said we have not experienced that in the post-war period from economic factors. And the other thing, and this refers to some of the comments of Senator Courtney, is that for 2002-2003, we still are assuming a 7% growth rate for the fiscal year. So yes, there is still downside risk. 7% is low for what you would see in an economic recovery year, but if we see a double dip or continue basically staying on the bottom, that 7% is likely too optimistic. It is very possible that you could see further decline in terms of the revenue forecast. The second part of the chart there for September, the gap calculation there, shows you the change in the general fund revenue forecast compared to where you thought you were when you concluded the third special session, and that's down $497 million. I also put in the minus $50 million that resulted from the veto and sustaining the veto of House Bill 4056, and that doesn't technically represent a deficit because there was a disappropriation to schools of $50 million, but I put that in there just to, so you know where that fits in. I've then gone down and listed a series of options, and again, these are just very rough examples and lots of variations within each one of those. I just wanted to give you a sense of an across-the-board cut of 5% for the fiscal year would be about $282 million. That would be using the whole fiscal year. You've heard bigger numbers from the governor because he's looking at 8 to 9 months remaining rather than the entire fiscal year. And Ken has the details on what some of those options might be. This is merely a rough example. 2002, a 10% rate increase would generate about $441 million. That means we would go to a 557799 for a temporary one-year rate increase. You've seen discussions on the House side of the possibility of about a 5% rate increase. That would generate for this biennium, if you extended it for 2 years, would generate roughly $300 million, a little less than $300
million. Mr. Chair, Senator Harper,
do that again for all the 557595. You generate how much?
The one I've got there is 557799. That's $441 million. That's 1 year. The other one I mentioned was the 5% rate increase, which would put you about 527394. That's not on there.
It's 10%.
Right. That's just the 10%. So if you did 1 year at 5%, you'd get 220. Some discussions of making that 2 year or 3 year. If you did 2 year, it would be about $300 million.
Is that the one being discussed in the House site?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
3 year at 5%.
The one being discussed would be 3 years at 527394, and that would generate about $290 million in 0103.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Attorney E.
Well, what is CIG?
Oh, sorry, Peggy.
Oh,
first one. I apologize.
Where all your money goes.
in the pit, yeah.
9%.
I've also had a 10% temporary rate increase for corporate is about $31 million. Thing to remember about corporate is, I haven't broken it out here for 0102, but corporate income tax collections in this last fiscal year are down 47% from the prior year. And there are no legislative changes that would decrease that. So that's raw decline in profits of 47%. And of course, that's also related to the capital gains. That's even on the stock market. One of the reasons why it's been so weak is the corporate earnings are down. I've also...
Well, what's happening to the F corporations that run through the personal income tax?
Senator, we don't have a good short-term look at that because it's not broken out. We're just seeing those collections coming in rolled into the income tax. But I suspect they're very weak right now. That's another one of those components of the personal income tax is very volatile because, as you know, personal income tax is you know, about 15% really business income. And those are the components that are most sensitive to the cycle. Proprietor's income, subchapter S, capital gains, other investment income. Those are the components that we suspect are dropping amounts.
So they're even worse than the corporate that we're getting?
They may not be worse than corporate, but they certainly, they in all likelihood, decline more than this 12% that you see for the overall number.
Senator Courtney?
Well, maybe that's just the answer to the question I had. As a layperson, when you say that earnings are down for corporates 47%, many people, I think, who hear that think that means all business. But that doesn't apply. That's why I think some way or other, this is a layperson talking to you. I wish in terms of the language that's used to describe some of these income taxes that there would be this third category for me. You have just what I pay in personal income tax, the PTs of the world. Then you have these corporates, I guess, and you have all other businesses. And I just wish that in some way that would be a third category that people like me, not a budgeteer, could truly see what's going on. Do you understand what I'm saying, Paul? And I know that no one else here has that problem. You immediately know what these figures mean. But I'm telling you, I don't get it. I hear corporates. I mean, that means all businesses. Anybody who has a business, they're down 47%. And I don't think that's what you meant by that figure.
You're right, Senator. The corporate income tax of those filing as corporations is absolutely down 47%. I'm able to cite those numbers for you because we keep that separate. You know, separate books, separate tax.
Right.
We know what that's coming in on a daily basis.
Right.
We don't know on a daily basis what's happening with Senator Duke's question on the S corporations. We just know what's the
so an S corporation is a small business model.
Small business that files a personal income tax.
That's what an S corp. Okay.
Pass.
You don't have that.
Those they come in as personal income tax collections.
Again, Mr. Chair, this is the thing. We need to heart. We need to know what the pulse is there in a state that is what a small business state. Aren't we a small? I always heard we were a small business state more than anything else.
The small business is very important in this state. You know, it's part of the broader issue that I raised is the components of income. What we do, but we can only really do this after we get all the returns in, and we can go through, we can break down what are the components of income, because the S corporations, the small business, they have to file or fill out different forms with their personal income tax when they send it in. So we can break all that out, and we can look at those components to see how much they've changed. And that's where I think we need to go in terms of analyzing the volatility of the income tax. I know that's where the cause is. It's those components of income that are changing, and those volatile components are what are bouncing around us. It's not the wages of the typical worker. It's those other sources of income, business income, investment income.
Thank you.
Senator Harper.
So we don't generally break out the S corp person.
Senator, we do that, but we don't do that until we get all the returns in and we can analyze the returns. So what we do see coming into through the Department of Revenue is we know what's withholding, we know what's estimated payments, we know what's final payments, and we know what's refunds. Those are the categories that we know, but we don't know who's putting into those categories.
Okay.
One of the things that the department has done, which has been pretty helpful in this recession, is they have broken up withholding by industry. So we can track the withholding receipts coming in by industry, and that way we get a better sense of what industries are declining. And for example, we've really seen where the manufacturing sector withholding receipts have dropped way off and really began dropping off in 2001 and have continued to drop off significantly. Where some of the other sectors like service, medical services, for example, have been pretty stable.
Okay. Senator Price? You want to continue, Paul?
Okay. Mr. Chair, just continuing on your list of possible solutions, I have included some disconnects from the bonus depreciation. I think it is important to recall that the federal bonus depreciation was passed in March, but it was retroactive to expenditures on capital equipment made beginning 9/11/01. So it was retroactive at that time. So we basically had on the books for almost a year now a bonus depreciation, which we've connected to.
I have a question on that bonus depreciation for businesses. If the corporate side is down, and the bonus depreciation is up, then what is the net effect on the taxes? Because I'm seeing the decline in one, so if you're declining in income, how are you making investments?
You're absolutely right on that connection between the two. We think of it as if you're down on income, what's your incentive to invest? So we don't have the net income.
So are these numbers really reflective of what is really being done on the investment side? I guess is my bottom line.
Mr. Chair, if you recall back to the last special session when this issue came up, and our revenue estimate at that time was $124 million. Now our estimate is $102 million over the same period. We've adjusted that down to reflect the September forecast and the very low level of collections. So we think collections are low not because people are taking a bonus. We think they're low because net income is low. Therefore, we've lowered our estimate of what we think depreciation, how much it's affecting that revenue stream. So basically, as you're saying, there's not much capital investment going on. So that's why we've lowered those estimates.
Senator Hughes?
Mr. Chair, I have the same concern. This is through this biennium, correct?
Yes.
So if through June 30th of next year, I don't see a lot of starts going out, and the ones that are starting to be talked about, I've got a mill that I put in a new paper machine, but they're talking 2002-2003, so my guess is that they wouldn't be taking that depreciation then until the next biennium.
That's probably true.
How far are you with these numbers? We talked about the 7.2% increase, and I agree with you. I think that that's a real shaky number. How comfortable are you with $102 million?
I'm comfortable with those numbers for being consistent with economic projection. If the economy is weaker than we think, those numbers are probably too high, but that also means the overall revenue estimates are probably too high. Which has been the case. So that would be the risk. You have to think about the bonus depreciation, recognize it applies to a very broad range of assets. A lot of, for example, what we call replacement investments. Machines wear out, computers wear out. So that kind of spending is going on in the economy on a regular basis. We think investment spending, runs about 10-15% of total spending. Oregon has a $100 billion economy. So you're going to have, in any given year, $10-15 billion going on of investment. Now that may drop 20%, but still there's a fair amount going on. The bonus depreciation effect does even apply to things like software. So you
said?
Yes. So you do see some smaller activities going on in terms of investment. But whether that number is too high, again, if the forecast is too optimistic, it probably is too high.
Sure.
Senator Bensley, I'd like to share you all you brought to my mind an additional concern, I guess, this morning. And that is that when we make our projections, are we looking at the worst-case scenario, the most positive scenario, or how do you gauge that in the middle? And it would seem to me, I agree with some of the other comments made here this morning, that we should be protecting ourselves with looking more to the conservative side.
Senator, I've been within the forecasting business for a long time in this state as well as another state, and that's always been the debate: do you try to be conservative on the forecast? And really, I think what you have to have from your forecasting unit is objectivity, is a middle-of-the-road estimate. I think they're not very credible if everybody knows, well, they're intentionally trying to lowball it or they're intentionally being optimistic. So they have to shoot for the middle. And I think they do that, based on what's happened. The forecasting process tends to be conservative. But I mean conservative in a different way than most people think about it. I don't mean conservative in the sense that, you know, you tend to lowball it or try to lowball it. You're conservative in the sense that what you know what happened, the recent past. And why were these forecasts too optimistic? Well, certainly one of the reasons is we've had 10 years of very strong growth consistently, in which I was responsible for underestimating revenue. So, yeah, we did have a period in which things were good, and that did influence the forecast process, but that was history. You've got something that's really the only hard thing you've got to go on in forecasting. So you do typically respond with what you know, and so this is what's clearly outside the range of what's happened in recent years.
All right, we're going to continue, please.
Just going down the list again, Mr. Chair, I have listed cigarette revenue bonds. There are, of course, a large number of different bond options that can be considered. This one is the one on the House side, the Speaker's plan, which raised $250 million. We estimate that annual interest costs would be about $63 million for 4 years, and then a residual in a fifth year, a little bit less than that. So a net cost of around $300 million to pay back the $250.
Can I ask you on the cigarette? I had a question posed to me by one of my colleagues, and I didn't know. The $487 million, does it have $50 million included in it for cigarette tax? I don't know the question.
Oh, in terms of the size of the gap?
Yeah.
Yes. The 482 is a projected deficit. Now, if Measure 20 is defeated in your budget, omnibus budget bill from last session, you have $65 million, $62 million disappropriation for the health plan. So that's going to take place. If the cigarette bill passes, then that's backfilled for that $62 million. If it doesn't pass, you don't have the $62 million, but you're still in balance because you disappropriated $62 million. Similar with Measure 19 on the Stability Fund.
Would it be possible to get a memo that we could share with our colleagues? Because this question keeps arising by our colleagues. And I think we need to be able to explain, is there in fact a gap, or is there in fact a reduction from the $482 million by $50 million or $62 million? Yeah, but we need to be able to show that to our colleagues and intelligently explain to them what the reduction is, what the gap is, what it isn't. And the questions keep being posed to us. I think there's a lot of rumors and second guessing on what it is and what it isn't. But we need to have something in a memo form that we can distribute to our members.
So, Mr. Chair, if you, thing you might be referring to is the $50 million that was involved with the veto of 4056, and that $50 million was anticipated to be restored with cigarette bond revenue, but as Paul mentioned, that was also disappropriated from K-12. So the cut is in place. And if you look on the list that Paul is talking from, you see under the September gap calculation that the forecast change is $497 million down, and then he's put in that $50
million down at the bottom.
Towards the middle of the page where it says veto of the House Bill 4056.
Right.
So that is not part of the 497 because it's already been disappropriated. But if the body decides they want to restore that $50 million to K-12, then you would have your gap is in the 547 because you would have to come up with additional revenue since that bond was vetoed and sustained.
Okay, that would also be helpful to explain that portion of it as well. So I think there's a lot of misunderstanding of what it is and what it isn't, and we need to clearly delineate for our colleagues what it is. Senator Harper?
The House cigarette bond proposal was new cigarette tax money.
Senator, the way the bill is written, it only applies to cigarette revenue raised from rate increases after September 1, 2002. So the only thing right now that it would apply to would be Measure 20.
Right.
Our projections are that the debt service would use about half of that 60, what that 60 cents would generate. So it generates about $123 million a year.
Senator Clinton.
So if the cigarette tax fails and this bond proposal were to pass, what happens?
Senator, the Treasury would have authority to issue bonds but no revenue to back them up. So they wouldn't be able to do any bonding until you pass something out. So it applies to cigarette increases after September 1, 2002. So you can come in and pass something else and apply it to it, but unless you did that, there would be no revenue source to back up the bonds, therefore they wouldn't be issued.
Okay. One other thing, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Ken, I know you just had an exchange here. I totally don't understand what you said, but don't be threatened by that. I'm getting clobbered over what the real number is. When I told the president the other day it was 417, that's what the government officer was saying, he went nuts. So I don't know what you just said to Lynn, but about, you know, what you just did. But I you're going to have to layperson me again on what number we're talking about, because people are jumping out windows around here about what is the real number we're looking at. You understand? But don't even try to explain it, just because I won't get it. But you just got to understand that. Do you understand what he said to you?
That's why I asked for a memo. So
yeah, but
because you gave me a figure the other day of 417. And I don't think that's an accurate number.
Look, that's come out of the governor's office. They're the ones that gave me that figure.
Well, I...
Yeah.
Let's just get a clarification from our staff and have it presented in memo form in layman's terms so we all understand what it is and what it isn't. Okay? It's the Peter principle. Simplicity is that.
We could do the Pooh Bear form.
Pooh Bear form?
Yeah, you know.
Okay. Senator Harper, do you have a question? Okay. Senator Yee.
Paul, what is the annual interest cost for the cigarette revenue bond? Are you saying it's $63 million per year?
Senator, that's assuming a five-year bond. Actually, the bill itself gives up to 6 years, but we've calculated on a five-year bond. And the fifth year would be slightly less than $63 million. And the overall debt service cost would be about $295
million. $295 million plus the principal?
No, including the principal.
Oh, including the principal.
So we're estimating an interest rate of between 4.2 and 4.7, between 4.2% and 4.7% on the bond.
So, Paul.
Yes, please.
So the interest cost is $63 million for 5 years.
That would be the payback. That would be the debt service cost, including reserves, including payment of the principal and payment of the interest cost. So that would be the entire debt service cost. And the $63 million would be for 4 years, and then the fifth year would be slightly less than that because it would be paid off, have to be paid off before the end of it, before April 1st.
So the annual interest cost is talking about $15 million per year.
The annual interest cost would be right in the neighborhood of $15 million. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, if you want to continue, please.
Okay. Mr. Chair, just some other things there. Beer and wine tax proposals that you've seen before from the governor's office. Of course, the time frame is time is passing on, and so the amount of revenue that you raised in 01-03. We're estimating now at $15 million. This would assume a January 1 start date, and we'd have basically 5 months of collections. There's a 30-day lag there, so you really only get 5 months. It's about $3 million a month, we would estimate. Common school fund, unclaimed property balance. You may recall from the way back from the first special session that you did pass a bill that would use common school fund as a backup to one of your earlier plans. This says would be use of the unclaimed property balance, which we estimate about $120 million. We think there could be $100 million in borrowing and still maintain the net flow between property claims versus unclaimed property, because the state is liable to pay any claimed property that it has. So that would be a rough estimate there.
And then Senator Duke.
Paul, do we have any reason to believe this is constitutional?
We do, Senator. Basically, from opinions from legislative counsel, that it is constitutional. It's a statutory source. There's some issue about the state liability, about the definition of a sheet of property, and that's not my area of expertise, but there is some discussion about that and how much flexibility you have in terms of liability of the state. But based on just the financial flows, and that unclaimed property account is kept separate from the rest of the common school fund, it has a balance of about $120 million. It has a net inflow of about $15 million. That's income coming in versus outflow on claims. So we would say from a financial analysis standpoint that there's about $100 million that could be used without affecting those unclaimed property liabilities.
Mr. Jed, this one makes me really nervous. Anytime we get around the common school fund, it makes me nervous. But I don't think the money that we budgeted in the third special session out of the common school fund is ever going to show up. The agency sort of told us that when we were doing the hearing. And so now to go back to another section of the common school fund and take more, and this is money whose interest would have flowed into the common school fund if we would just leave it alone, right?
Yes, Senator, that would clearly be one of the costs of doing that would be you would reduce the principal, which is generating earnings for the fund, so those earnings would be less.
So $100 million over the next 10 years would give us roughly what an interest?
Projection, the last time I talked with Division of State Lands, they were assuming a five-year growth rate of about 7%. This is back to Senator Messer's question on equities markets. Those are mostly equities. About 70% of their fund is in equities, so it depends very much on how the stock market performs. They were assuming about 7%, so over a five-year period, you're looking at close to
59. Okay. Go ahead and continue, please.
The last thing I have there, it refers to the comments that Ken made on the $50 million. We've concluded that there, so just so that you're aware of that choice. We try to set up this box so that it's looking at what you approved in the third special session, you know, what you were assuming and what you thought you had in terms of the budget, and then what's changed since then. And clearly, one of the things that has changed was the veto of 4056, and so that means you're not where you thought you were at the end of that special session. So that's why we've added that in, and that's how we get to these numbers. We use that end of your last session as the starting point for the next session in your decisions. You can see the total solutions are about $1.3 billion. They're not all cumulative, but to give you a sense of just the kind of things that we've laid out. And again, this is certainly not exhaustive. There are other things, and there are a large number of permutations and variations off each one of these. The last thing, Mr. Chair, on the other side, we're often asked about kind of what's happened so far, what we've done so far, and this is just a listing of the actions that have taken to up to the September forecast, which is where your gap analysis begins. I did make an adjustment on the budget reductions and making it $570 million. to include the effects of the veto, took out the $50 million from bonding revenue that would have come from 4056. But the rest of them are laid out in terms of the actions that have been taken to reconcile basically a $1.6 billion shortfall at this point.
Okay. Thank you very much, Senator Harper.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Paul, maybe this is a DSL question, but selling state land, taking a look at that as a possible solution, and then timber harvest, particularly salvage timber, anybody kicking that around in your office?
We have not specifically looked at the numbers on that. I don't know if fiscal has looked at that.
We've, in the past, Senator Harper, we've looked at selling various pieces of state land, usually smaller parcels of like surplus property. The current holding of the division of state land, a lot of that land is in Eastern Oregon, is range land where they have grazing leases on that land now. And I don't know the value, how much the state could actually get for that. As far as timber, that is always, we've looked at that in the past. However, it's not a short-term solution because it takes planning and increasing harvest on the state forest land takes about a six-year period for planning and development. And there has been some speculation of taking the some of the forest fire services and salvaging that timber. However, most of that's on southern land, so we don't know exactly what kind of effect that would have on it. It would be an economic stimulus if that could be done quickly, but again, we have an environmental planning process that needs to go through.
And even what salvage strip would be on state timber land, we wouldn't get much. In essence, we would get what would normally go to school districts because that would reduce our liability to them. But that's it. The rest of it all goes to local taxing districts and the Department of Forestry. Yes, that's true. It doesn't help us on this piece of paper, but it may help us for that plan.
Can it help you?
I didn't hear him. It goes to the district here.
Okay. Further questions? It is 10 o'clock. The floor session for the Senate is scheduled for 10, but I would like to move the committee on through this. Mr. Rocco, if you'll do your presentation next. Senator Yee wants to testify after Mr. Rocco does his presentation. And then if we're finished by whatever time, then we can probably either stand in recess or stand adjourned for the day until we get some business met before our committee. But I'd like to move us along on a schedule so that we at least get this preliminary portion of the business out of the way so we know what the scope and size of the problem is and what the potential solutions might be.
And
staff will get us an excuse from the floor. Okay, Mr. Rocco.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I provided you with just four pieces of basically background information. The first is just a different look at what Paul is just giving you, which is sort of a cumulative action that we've taken since the close of regular session to deal with the budget shortfall. And it's just split up a little differently into categories of the types of expenditure reductions that you've taken so far, and then in showing you what the new tax revenues are, one-time actions, and then the only ongoing non-tax revenue that you've passed is the Sunday liquor sale. The reason for this is just to show you that some of these are important for your 0305 problem, which hasn't gotten a lot of attention because of the issues you're dealing with to get out of 0103, but there's a looming problem for 0305, and at this point, the cigarette tax increase and the phase-in of Measure 88 and the OLCC Sunday sales are the only sources of revenue that you've increased that would help you in that 0305 problem. The second thing I provide you is an appendix from a publication that we have put out after each of the special sessions. Legislative Revenue has put out a publication describing the actions of each special session on the revenue side, and we've done one in Legislative Fiscal on the expenditure side. This is a table that shows you by agency the types of reductions that have been taken, the adjustments to the budget by each individual agency, and that's just for your reference. If you had a question about a particular agency and the effect of the cuts on that agency. The third item is the governance plan that was produced as his solution for the shortfall, and this was make across-the-board reductions of $482 million. And this is a part, I think, of the confusion of the different numbers that you asked Paul and I to get your memo on. The general fund shortfall is $497 million from just in revenue, but that's assuming a $15 million ending balance. The governor has, because of the allotment authority the governor has to make reductions, he has used the $482 million, which is to get the state back into balance. And as you know, there's a lawsuit that was put into abeyance after when the third special session started, when the governor used his allotment authority on a non-across-the-board basis. He made sort of selective cuts. This time the proposal is to make across-the-board cuts to come up with that shortfall amount of $482 million. And this table shows you where those cuts, if that was put into effect, where those cuts would happen agency by agency.
And this is Senator Harper.
Could you still mix and match the 482, or is it just a straight percentage on every appropriation?
Chair, Senator Harper, this is just the same percentage to all appropriation lines. Within each of those categories, however, there can be adjustments made by the individual agency to target where those reductions would be made within the agency's appropriation line. And we are the Budget Management Division of Department of Administrative Services has asked agencies to respond by Thursday of this week on their more detailed plan for how they would make cuts of this nature. And that information will be available to us. The reason it's delayed until Thursday is the time it takes to get that together. And if this is done, this will be done through administrative rules. And there's a period of time when that rule has to go through hearings process, and it doesn't take effect immediately as it would if you would make reductions in the appropriation bill. And if you notice on page three of this, under the legislative branch and the judicial branch and Secretary of State and Treasurer of State, there are zeros because the governor has no authority to make allotment reductions in those branches or offices, because they are not executive branch offices.
So this would reflect you approximately 5% if you just kept those areas that you have to do.
That's correct. However, if you look at what's left in the biennium, then the percentage is increased due to what's left.
And Mr. Chair,
yes.
And I think our members are going to say this would be 417 if Measure 20 passes. Is that what we're
saying? No, I don't believe. I don't remember. Paul and I don't know where the 417 figure has come from.
$65 million, 482, but I don't.
Well,
center, the even bigger amount is the stability fund, which is 150. Okay, the state school fund is reduced by 150, assuming that that will backfill it. So you have 215 million to be decided on September 17th.
And those amounts have already been taken out of the budget, so there is no shortfall because of it.
Okay.
And I find them.
Senator Medley. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ken, have you put any figures together projecting what would the dollars be saved if we reduce the work week of state employees or a percentage decrease in administrative costs?
We have looked into that, Senator, in terms of furloughing employees and reducing work week. The problem with that is that under labor negotiations and existing bargaining agreements, a number of state employees, you cannot reduce their work week without reopening the contract. So you are limiting those kinds of cuts to unrepresented and management employees. And in the case of some of those classes of employees, if you furlough them at all, then they become eligible for using vacation, accrued vacation leave first, or they become eligible for overtime, and right now they're not eligible for overtime pay. So, in effect, based on the nature of the bargaining agreements that exist in the contract, you could end up not saving a lot of money. So we are looking at those kinds of options for a longer-term solution.
You're not able, or the state's not able to reopen contracts?
The executive branch can do that. However, the legislature does not have the authority. So the government could ask unions to reopen contracts.
Okay.
Other questions? Sir, Ken, do you want to continue?
There's one other item that I provided, and this is just a snapshot of the 0305 situation based on the latest forecast figures. This is from the Department of Administrative Services based on that forecast. And we're still working with them to refine the numbers. However, you can see that based on the latest forecast, the shortfall that you're looking at for 0305 is about $1.5 billion. And that just includes, that assumes expenditures at the current service level for general and moderate.
Okay. Thank you very much. Senator Harper.
The expenditure is 13,453 of CSL. Is that what I can say? We calculated.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you both for your presentation. Are there any other questions by committee members? If not, I think the committee at some point for both of you is going to probably want to move to a work session and start coming up with some possible recommended ideas and solutions. I don't think that we can afford to wait for the House to get a major over. As I was questioned yesterday by the press and the media about a major coming over from the House, I said, well, we'll just probably gently lift it and tuck it and tap it a couple of times and send it back to them a little modified, but that's probably what will happen in the end package. So I think if we work together, both the House and the Senate, we can work with the UR staff and try to come up with a compromise that everybody can get behind and support. Is there further questions by many members of the two witnesses? No, thank you both.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Yee, would you like to go down and take the witness stand?
Yes, I appreciate that. Mr. Chairman and members of the Special Senate Budget Committee, For the record, State Senator Mei Yi representing Senator 615. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm here to submit a budget balancing plan to address the predicted $500 million shortfall. I believe we need a plan that will address today's deficit today and not borrow from future revenue or rely on accounting maneuvers. A plan that is not referred to the people for a decision because we are elected here to make difficult and responsible choices. A plan that will gain 16 votes in the Senate and 31 votes in the House. And above all, we need a plan that will preserve our core services without taking away the high quality that we are here to provide. This is a three-step plan that will, one, ask the legislature set its priorities for state spending and eliminate low-priority programs. I'm asking we each sit down, go over a list of state agencies, and cut 2% of the $5.6 billion second-year budget. We should separate what are our needs and wants, take care of the needs, and sustain the wants until times are better. The more we can cut the want list, the more we can preserve our essential high-priority programs. This step will help us reduce $112 million. Two, the second step is to cut across the board 5% of our high-priority programs. The legislative direction to the agencies is that this cut can only apply to reduction in administrative costs, non-essential services, including no salary increases, no new hires, and suspend all new programs. This will help us reduce $285 million in spending. Step three is to raise revenue coming from me. This is record-breaking. Is to raise revenue by disconnecting from the Federal Bonus Depreciation Act. This will bring us $102 million in revenue. The disconnect would not hinder economic development and have little, if any, effect on business investment decisions because, A, corporations are receiving five times as much in federal tax reduction. Oregon tax break is a very small part of the tax benefit, since federal corporate tax rate is 34%, while Oregon's rate is only 6.6%. B, many investments are made out of state, yet Oregon tax collection is affected. For example, Intel investment in its Chandler, Arizona facility will reduce net income to the company it apportions to Oregon for income tax purposes. So we don't receive the benefit of the investment, but we have to pay for the tax credit if we stay connected. C, the Act is retroactive to September 11, 2001, and the Act was known in March. So many investment decisions were made without knowledge of the incentive. So for these reasons, I feel that we can balance the budget of $500 million by taking these three steps. I asked Senator President for his response when I presented this proposal to him, and he said that all revenue-raising measures have to come from the House, and he advised that I go see the Speaker regarding my plan, and I have tried to make an appointment with the Speaker to explain my proposal. In the meantime, I explained my proposal to Senator Roger Beyer, and he said that if the cigarette tax measure passes in mid-September, it can be used to reduce the $482 million deficit to $417 million, and we can therefore balance the budget without the need for the disconnect. So Senate can propose this proposal without using step three the disconnect of the federal depreciation act. So all we need to do is reduce the low priority programs, 30 million more. So reduce the low priority program by 20 million more. So reduce the low priority program by 132 million and reduce 285 million by cutting across the board 5% of the high priority program and come to $417 million. This is Senator Roger Byer's proposal. And I heard your discussion about whether the cigarette tax revenue will in fact reduce the deficit or not. If not, we can go back to my original plan of three steps, and I would appreciate your favorable consideration. I think the sooner we act, the sooner we can close the special session and solve the problem and go home. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Senator. Are there any questions by committee members? Thank you very much for your very well thought out and very well presented ideas here. I think this is something certainly that the committee can take under advisement, and we'll certainly give it proper consideration along with everything else that's being presented for our consideration as well. So we thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to ask Mr. Rocco to give us a list of state agencies with its current second year budget, including general funds and lottery funds, so that we can go down the list and decide the high priorities and low priorities. And whenever the low priority program gets 16 votes, we can eliminate them and put more money in high priority programs.
All right. You might want to pursue that with Mr. Rocco. He's not here in the room. I think you have.
Oh.
Certainly you might want to pursue that with him.
Yes.
So thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify for any reason at all? Yes, would you come forward, please? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and distinguished members of this excellent committee. I'm State Representative Donna Nelson from District 24 in beautiful Yamhill County, home of the Spruce Goose. I'm here today to ask you to forge ahead with constructive suggestions, concepts such as Senator Yee's, in helping the House here comprehend that there are other ways in which we can tackle this tremendous problem we're facing here in the state. While I'm not as well-trained as Senator Yee, I must say that she's always most thorough in what she presents. And what I've just heard today is what I've been saying since the first hour that we began this special session, and have, without a great deal of luck, continued to battle toward this idea. Somehow it seems that in my philosophy of nobody's as smart as everybody, that we have not had that full support of being able to bring the Senate together with the House and together as a united body, as representatives of and for the people, discuss this very critical issue of what is our purpose and what are the core services of our state government. When we think of the unconscionable cut of our security in a time of terrorism, when we think of our beloved senior citizens, our veterans, our disabled, our developmentally delayed being hit with further cuts in programs that are sustainable, or that sustain them, their very sustenance, I'm concerned that something is wrong with the way we're doing business. While I'm a proponent of hearing budgets first in the next session and living within 80% of our budget and spending the next 5 months, you know, adding or deleting or refining or restructuring or reforming programs, I realize, Mr. Chair, that we don't have that time now. I was concerned that it seemed more appropriate that we recess to a time certain, which would be September 18th, at which time we would know money certainty. We would know whether our taxpayers will once again take on another obligation with a cigarette tax. While that does not seem to be a proposal that is accepted on the House of Representatives, I would like you further to consider that concept. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I think the time is now. Now is the time to determine what our primary purpose is as far as what services are we absolutely required to provide to our citizens for their security, their safety, their sustenance, and their education. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any questions or comments by committee members? Senator Huffer.
Do you have a list for us?
I regret that I don't at this moment. Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify? If not, we're going to stand in recess at the call of the chair, and we'll try to give as much adequate notice as possible to everyone if we're going to take some action. So thank you for being here this morning. We'll stand in recess.